City Talk 105.9 official podcasts online at citytalk.fm. This is Talk to Trisha on City Talk 105.9.
Hi, welcome and a happy new year. This is Trisha Goddard on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. And if you don't know that by now, where have you been for the last year? Yes, I know it's hard to believe, but the fact that we're in January 2009 means it's almost 1 year since City Talk took to the airwaves. But before we get stuck into the new year, how was 2008 for you? Well, I had a pretty gruesome year. As you probably know, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. But the good news is, and let's focus on the good news, with operations, radiotherapy, chemotherapy, exercising all the way through, I'm out the other side. Well, whatever personal challenges we've experienced over the last 12 months, it has been an extraordinary year in the news, hasn't it? Who could have predicted the rise of Barack Obama and the fact that the USA is about to swear in its first black president? Or the fact that we're in the middle of a financial crash to rival the Great Depression of the 1930s? Or, come to think of it, that John Sargent would win the hearts of the nation with his Paso Doble? 2008 was a momentous year for Liverpool, of course, and not just because there's a new radio station in town. Capital of Culture brought some amazing spectacles to the city. What was your favourite? The opening ceremony at St George's Plateau? The giant spider, aka La Machine, the MTV Awards, or maybe it was the city being taken over by Super Lamb Bananas. I've got to say that one of the highlights of my year has been meeting some of the amazing people who've been on this show over the last 12 months. Gosh, where do I start? G and Dominique Walker, who spoke so, so movingly about losing Anthony. Stephen Yip, the founder of local children's charity Kind, or Liverpool's laughter therapist, Stephanie Davis, who cheered us all up, didn't she? It's been a long, long list of remarkable people. Well, this week, it's still kind of the holidays, so we can let our hair down a bit more and do something slightly different on the show. We've invited some of the names from that list to join us for a trawl through their own personal highs and lows of 2008. So, here today to give us their take on the people and things that got them going or got their goat over the last 12 months are local journalist and burlesque promoter Liz Lacey, PR guru and former editor of the News of the World, Phil Hall, and Ewan Jenkins, who runs the Wirral branch of the Terence Higgins Trust. Well, welcome back to City Talk, all of you. Now, as I mentioned, today's show is a little different. Each of the guests and me have made a list of the people or things that have made them happy, either made us mad or sad, and some of the emotions in between, over the last 12 months. So here are the categories. Number one, hero of the year. Two, we've got villain of the year. The person or thing that we will miss. Number four is the person or thing we'll be glad to see the back of. Number five, event of the year. Number six, best news of the year. That'll be a tough one considering all the bad news that's in the papers. Which flows on to number seven, worst news of the year. Number eight, the non-event of the year. And of course, we've got to finish up, haven't we, with our New Year's resolutions. So there's some food for thought and room for robust discussion there. So stick with us as we look back at the good, the bad and the ugly of 2008 between now and 10 o'clock here on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
This is Talk to Trisha on City Talk 105.9.
Yes, indeed. This is Talk to Trisha with me, Trisha Goddard, and I'm joined by Liz Lacey, Phil Hall and Ewan Jenkins as we look back at some of the people, events and things that have made either a positive or negative impression on us over the last year. So let's begin with something nice. Hero of the year. Liz, starting with you, who do you nominate as your hero of 2008?
John Smeaton. John Smeaton, she said, smoker.
So just fill us in for those of us who
John Smeaton was the heroic baggage handler at Glasgow Airport who apprehended one of the people who were convicted at the end of 2008 for the terrorist attacks on Glasgow Airport. And he set about them and warned them that this was Glasgow and we will set about you. And he became a cult figure, not only for that, but for his occasional pronouncements on the nature of Glaswegians, which came down to, we'll set about you. And he's now got a website. He's been awarded.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, I'm serious. He's been awarded Hero of the Year in various categories,
but
describes himself as hero and smoker. And I think to be a smoker too at the moment is quite a brave thing.
So maybe he was outside having a ciggy when
exactly.
When he saw the,
if he hadn't been doing
to
that,
drive through there. All right. So you nominate John Smeaton.
Yes.
What about you, Phil? Who's your hero of the year?
Barack Obama would be my hero. I think he's taken all the knocks and the American electoral system was very, very tricky. There were a lot of sniping going on, and I think he handled it absolutely magnificently. I think he rose above it. He didn't get into the pit fight they try to draw him into. And I think he gives us all hope. I mean, I don't think he's got solutions to the world economic crisis. And I think, unfortunately, the media over here think that somebody takes charge of a country that can solve the problems. I don't think that's true. But I do think he gives hope to the world. And I think, you know, there's hope that some of the conflicts around the world might start to dissipate once he's in charge.
So, Phil, if you had to give him advice about publicity or a public image for the rest of this year, because the first year is always pretty crucial, what would that be?
I would say affect the media by your actions and not by your words. Don't go out there trying to spin. Stop trying to tell things as they're not, and just get on with the job and let people draw their own conclusions. Because I think one of the great problems in the media is when you go out there, and, you know, classic example, really, and, you know, Liz's hero, absolutely, you know, right to nominate him, but in the papers, they're questioning whether he was a hero or not. Other people are saying that actually what he did was stand there and watch the actions of other people who went into the fire and went into the terrorists, and those guys walked away with no recognition, and this guy's been, you know, setting up a website, as you say, and creating a whole story around himself. So, again, anybody who sticks their head above the parapet, you know, gets questioned. And I think it's so difficult to handle the media, particularly in this country.
Yeah, OK. And what about for you, Ewan, your hero?
Well, Tricia, it kind of follows on a little bit from Phil's answer. And I'd have to say that I'm not really one that's much into hero worship. But looking back at the events of 2008... I think that if I was going to pick a hero, it wouldn't be one hero, it would be many, many heroes. And those are the individual Americans, many of whom were elderly, many of whom came from black and minority ethnic communities, so a lot of African Americans, who had never voted before and actually realised that something very, very significant was afoot and made the effort to come out and vote for Barack Obama. My own personal view is that it's a little bit early to say that kind of Barack himself is a hero, because we haven't really been able to see what he's going to do.
But
I think in terms of actually putting him in the position that he's in, the ordinary Americans that actually got out of their houses and into those huge lines that we all saw really deserve some credit.
Okay, so that kind of links in with Phil's. I was trying to think who my hero of the years would be, and I'd say again people at community levels who give a lot. You probably know somebody in your neighbourhood. Kind of the people with no names, and the Mirror Pride of Britain was one such awards ceremony this year. There have been a number of them. So I'd say for everybody at that street level, if you like, who've done that extra something. And I've got a personal one, actually. I have to say my surgeon, my oncologist, my nurses and everybody else. Has anybody else got a personal hero? Because we've done big national scale ones. Phil, would that be your wife?
Actually, you know, it wouldn't actually, although she is absolutely fantastic. But I mean, the one thing about this job is you do get to meet some amazing people. And there's a young lady who I won't mention her name, but she's had a brain hemorrhage and she's been given only a few months to live. And, you know, in most circumstances, people like that would give up. Yeah. This lady set up a website, said, come and date me for £500, and has been going out on dates and has raised thousands of pounds and given it to people who suffer similar conditions to her. And actually, she's already gone past the deadline when the surgeon said she wouldn't survive. And I just think she's just one of those people that inspires me, certainly, because she won't give up and she's fighting back. And I just think it's a fantastic example of overcoming adversity.
Fabulous. Ewan, have you got any personal heroes, would you say, in your own life?
Well, I mean, I think for me, it kind of links into my work a little bit that, you know, we're all sort of, I mean, we're not going to get through this show, I doubt, without mentioning something to do with the credit crunch. But I think that, you know, working in the charitable sector, one of the things that we have seen is that charitable giving in many respects has dried up. And we've had through the course of the year, we've had, much like your own sort of initial thoughts, Tricia, we've had many ordinary individuals who've gone out and put themselves out by doing things like running the London Marathon to raise funds for us in a time when we really need it. So I think if I had personal heroes, it would be those individuals who are kind of keeping us going and making sure that our services don't disappear.
And Liz, what about you?
Very near to home. My mother, I have to say, because she's 85 this year. She's in almost constant pain through a whole variety of conditions, but she is very sharp-tongued, sharp-witted, and always beautifully accessorized any time of the day or night.
How lovely. How gorgeous.
And she taught me how to shop at charity shops as well and still look very elegant. So that's something I'm carrying with me forward into the new year.
Absolutely, especially with the credit crunch. As Ewan said, it'll probably get mentioned later on in the programme. But our next category is Villain of the Year. So where do we start? Liz, who did you choose as your least favourite person?
Oh, it's Robert Mugabe again, I'm afraid. Even if Bananarama did write a song about him waiting for them. But I just think he's the most obnoxious blight on that country. And the sooner somebody does something about it, the happier that an awful lot of people will be.
OK, Phil?
Well, I think I want to. I mean, there are so many villains out there. We could name a thousand.
Oh,
I think.
Go on.
all sorts. But rather, to make light of it, really, I think my villain was Russell Brand, actually, for leading Jonathan Ross astray. I mean, poor sweet innocent Jonathan. Of course, he's never been naughty in his life. But I think my wife and I enjoy the glass of wine in front of the Jonathan Ross show late on a Friday night, because we don't enjoy that luxury anymore because he's been taken off air. And I just think, Russell, leave poor Jonathan alone.
He's got to be old enough and nasty enough to look after himself.
Well, let me tell you a story. I hired Jonathan once when I was editing a newspaper. He was our film critic, and I found out after 6 months that he'd persuaded and charmed one of my secretaries to go to the film in his place and write the film reviews for him. So he is capable of mischief. You're right.
He's probably the one who led Russell astray.
I think quite right. And also, you know, from a PR perspective, they should have apologised, made a donation to charity, and I think the thing would have moved on. What happened was the BBC showed a real lack of leadership in that situation and didn't take, you know, just didn't take control of it. And it, you know, it came back to bite them.
And Ewan, what about you, your villain of the year?
Well, I absolutely promise you, Tricia, that Liz and I were not conferring prior to speaking with you this evening. But my villain of the year also has to be Robert Mugabe. I think that some of the events that we've seen over in Zimbabwe this year have been really very disturbing. And whilst I appreciate that it's all very easy for us to sit back in the UK with, you know, actually even now, the significant amount of luxury that we have and kind of pass judgment, but I do think that something does have to be done, and we do need to sit up and take notice of the situation there before we see the whole country just completely cave in on itself.
Okay, no, I agree with you. Because you've brought up Robert Mugabe, I'd go for the bankers. Not all of them, but the few that sort of, you know, have caused the situation that we're in, and greed. If you want, the villain of the year, I'd nominate as absolute lust and greed for money. Like, what's his name? Madoff or Madoff? Made off with our money. Yeah. I mean, look at the billions involved. They've actually brought about something that the fanatics tried to bring about with 9/11, didn't they? By going for the World Trade Center, that what they wanted to do, they said, was to bring down the economy of the West, you know, the Sodom and Gomorrah and the money. When what they should have done is sent a couple of bankers to train up and work for a couple of institutions, because those guys did it way better than any fanatics could have done it.
Yeah, that's very true.
So I'd say them. Ewan, have you got another villain?
I do, and this is a little bit of a frivolous one again, and it's something that's quite personal to me because I really, really can't stand this television programme. But I would like to nominate for Villain of the Year the people who continuously bring us, "I'm a celebrity, get me out of here." I can't think of anything more banal than sitting watching a bunch of celebrities, some of whom, not all, but some of whom are probably a little bit desperate to revitalise a career, eating the most revolting things that you can possibly imagine. I didn't watch a moment of it, Tricia, and I never have done since the programme first came on television.
Don't you think Brian Paddick did a lot for... Well, actually, you had three gay contestants. You had Martina Navratilova, Brian Paddick, and Mr. Sulu, I call him, from Star Trek. Don't you think, in a way, that for your ordinary person out there who might have had preconceptions about what gay people are all about, it might have done some good?
But I think, to be brutally honest with you, if I really truly believe that the audience that show actually attracts is watching it for it being a social comment, then I would maybe actually run with your argument there, Trish. But unfortunately, I think that the majority of people who watch it get some kind of very odd kick, in my mind, out of watching people eating bugs and being covered in all sorts of revolting things. And
I think we have to be careful here, you know, because I think that's probably the majority of your listeners, Trish, that we're talking about. And I have to say, I think it's completely harmless. It's very entertaining. And to see, you know, some celebrities who often... you know, trumped up, to have them humbled and brought down to earth and actually have to, you know, survive in what are quite difficult challenges. I think it's quite an eye-opener. You see the ones that can survive and the ones that can't.
Esther Ranson, I sat next to Esther Ranson recently at something, and I said, what was it really like in the jungle? And got the most juicy gossip, far juicier than what they had to eat. But great to see an older woman in there holding her own. Liz?
Not that you're an older woman, Tricia, but have you been invited to go on this
yet?
Oh,
my God, yes. We always get... Everybody always gets invited to Strictly Come Dancing. I'm a celebrity, Big Brother, the lot.
I'm looking forward to seeing you ice skating, Tricia.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, actually, I can already ice skate, so I might be
fabulous.
Ruled out.
It's curious, isn't it, though, that people who are noted for doing one thing can't wait to get into these reality shows and show exactly how mediocre they are at doing something else.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. You're listening to Talk to Tricia here on City Talk 105.9, The Voice of Liverpool. We're doing a review of the year. We'll be back with more after this.
The Voice of Liverpool, City Talk 105.9. This is Talk to Tricia on City Talk 105.9.
You're listening to Talk to Tricia here on City Talk 105.9, The Voice of Liverpool. And this is our review of 2008, The Heroes and the Villains.
Talk to Tricia on City Talk 105.9.
Okay, let's go on now. The next category we've got is a person or thing that you will miss this year.
For me, the lovely, mellifluously voiced Oliver Postgate, who died at the end of 2008.
Who created Bagpuss?
Bagpuss, Pogleswood, Ivor the Engine, The Clangers, a real oeuvre of work. And one of the reasons that I have fond memories of him is that I actually stayed the night in his house in Kent, the spare room. He's a friend of mine who's a theatre designer. Had been working on something with him, and I'd come along for the ride, so to speak, and woke up staring at Plant from Pogle's Wood, which is a sort of benign triffid, if you can imagine such a thing, looming over me. And I was just so glad I hadn't taken anything intoxicating.
I was going to say, were you looking at a plant or did you smoke the plant?
It looked as though it could have smoked me. But his voice was so gorgeously reassuring, and... you listen to that voice and you don't think anything could possibly ever go wrong. It took me right back to childhood and listen with mother and all those very, very well-tempered programmes that children used to listen to before they started shooting up hookers and driving cars through shut windows on video games for enjoyment.
Referring to that, Tricia, I was at a party last week and Valerie Singleton was there. And she was absolutely charming and she had all the guys around her. And I was standing slightly in a different group and I said, is that Valerie Singleton flirting over there with a couple of the guys? Mm-hmm. And somebody said, yes. And we worked out she's 71 years old. She was absolutely fantastic. One of my heroines from my childhood. And
Did you flirt with her then?
I didn't, actually. I was too scared. You know what it's like when your sort of Blue Peter presenter is up there with, you know, sort of Barack Obama in terms of world fame when I was a young child. I couldn't go and... And I've met presidents and also I couldn't go and face Valerie Singleton. Far too intimidating.
You're listening to Talk to Tricia here on City Talk 105.9, The Voice of Liverpool. We're doing a review of the years and year and looking at the different categories, along with Ewan Jenkins, Liz Lacey and Phil Hall. And Phil, we've got to ask you the person or thing you will miss this year.
I say this slightly tongue-in-cheek, but it would be credit. Because nobody can get credit anymore, and probably for the best for all of us, actually, because I think we've all... being guilty of living beyond our means. I had a client here who was a very high-profile mortgage broker, and he said, you know, in this country, people had three anniversaries, birthday, Christmas, and remortgage day. And he said, he said he's seen that for the last 10 years, people remortgaging their homes every year because they want to pay off the credit cards, take an extra holiday, buy a new car, buy a widescreen television. I mean, madness. And... So people have lived in their homes, and instead of having a home that's now worth more, it's worth nothing more because they've spent it all. And so, as I say, slightly tongue-in-cheek, I think the thing that I'm going to miss is credit because we're not going to have the opportunity to do that, but I think it's for the best for all of us.
Yeah, it'd be a thing of the past. Ewan, personal thing you'll miss?
Well, mine's a little bit of an odd one, Tricia, in that the person that I'm going to miss the most is actually somebody that I have never met and is not a name that necessarily would be nationally recognised, but it's a young man by the name of Michael Korsar. Michael was a young teenage man who was murdered in Liverpool earlier on this year. And I have to be a little bit careful about what I say on this subject because, unfortunately, there is still a police investigation and a court case pending around this. But one of the things that's particularly upsetting to me around it is that the murder itself has an alleged homophobic element to it. And so I think that in terms of actually, you know, moving forward in 2009, it's very, very clear that despite legislation, despite huge moves forward in society, there is still a lot of discrimination out there and people suffering as a result of it potentially or in reality. So I think that the person that I'm going to nominate as the person that I will most miss is Michael.
Okay. I'd have to nominate continuing loss of innocence and good image for young people because I think that's taken a battering. Children, young people are labelled and unfortunately there are cases when teen gang members come to light or, you know, there takes one or two young people for all young people to be labelled. And I think year on we add to that. And I think this year the whole image of young people has taken a battering. There was a study out, in fact, earlier at the end of last year, there was a study out saying that people saw young people as animals. They used animalistic terms when describing them, herds, packs, animals. And I think that's very scary. And I think I've definitely seen it in my children. Every time something like that comes out, it marginalises young people even more. So there you are, Phil. I think young people need good PR.
Well, I think that's a very good point because, you and I know, everywhere you go, there are young people doing great work, great charity work, great positive work. And unfortunately, bad news sells newspapers and they jump on the bad news stories. And I think a lot of the charities and the organisations that do this good work will be a bit clever and quite seriously get out there on the front foot and show what people are doing.
Do you think they hide their light under the bushel? You know, the people who know that there's good stuff, it does seem to be buried, doesn't it?
I constantly hear stories about... I mean, I heard an amazing story about a guy who in London who... he's a chef. He did very well and just wanted to put something back. And he went into the East End of London. He now staffs this kitchen from people who are homeless, taking them off the street, turning them into absolute chefs. Several have left him now and become full-time cooks. They were homeless, living on the streets, set up this kitchen, set up a restaurant. It's had no publicity, which I
was going to say, why haven't we heard about this?
So great, he will do.
Oh, thanks.
To help them, and I will be helping them. Great story.
It's a fantastic story. Liz, do you think there's anything else that we've lost this year, apart from Oliver Postgate?
I'm hoping that we lose ridiculous shoes. I don't mean as individuals or losing one, but...
what will happen to Victoria Beckham if that happens?
She'll have to be barefoot. That has not given me many sleepless nights, I have to say. I'm sure she'll cope. She looks a resourceful sort to me. But yes, the heels have got higher and higher, and the accidents and the A&E figures have risen to meet them. And I don't see how anybody... It's going back to sort of 18th century where people needed ladies' maids to get them along the pavement. It's the most ludicrous piece of conspicuous consumption, which can only end in horrible visits to osteopaths and dreadful lack of mobility. And I think women have enough problems being nippy on the streets. You need to keep your wits about you and to shackle yourself with a pair of shoes that
and platforms
could
as well,
only be worn
platforms.
In bed safely. It is just beyond belief.
Well, you know about burlesque and wearing shoes in bed. Oh, you and yes. You wanted to come in.
Well, I was just going to say, I wonder if the way to lose shoes is potentially to start throwing them at people.
Well, hello.
Oh, shoe to kill policy.
Shoe to kill. Very nice. Yes, Mr. Bush won't thank you for that one. Okay, and let's come to the last one in this part of the show. The person or thing you'll be glad to see the back of.
Oh, Gordon Ramsay's family man persona.
Ooh!
I know, but I mean, to risk several layers of double entendre, it has been shoved down our throats a little bit over the past year. I mean, not only has he infested every show on television, but he's also endless merchandise, endless recipe books, and now his wife's started doing the Tina Ramsay domestic goddess bit as well. And, you know, I don't particularly care or want to know the details of what goes on in their private life, but I do find it faintly repulsive when there's one image and then the reality is so very, very different.
Can I come on, be honest, Liz? Were you a bit smug when all those stories came out about him, you know, supposedly philandering? Were you a bit sort of, ha-ha, and you couldn't be that brilliant?
I wasn't surprised because about 4 years ago, a friend of mine in a London press office had given me a particularly relevant bit of gossip, shall we say.
Ooh.
So it was interesting to see those things become incongruent. Oh. And yes, I did feel quite smug, if I'm really
sure. Now, on that subject, Phil, you've got to declare your hand, haven't you?
What with...
The Ramsay.
Gordon
stuff.
Ramsay. Oh, well, I certainly wasn't responsible for the Gordon Ramsay story, but the young lady involved in the story came in here to see us because she was inundated and didn't know how to deal with it. I mean, feel like someone actually brought it on yourself, but
yes, she came on our show, so
TV show. Yeah, what did you make of her, Trish?
Well, she came along and she talked to us, and then there was also another two ladies, and Liz, you might be interested in this one. There's a gold digger website.
Yes, where, I know the very one.
You know the yeah. Where if you want to meet. Oh gosh, yes. Well, if you want to meet a gold digger, you go on there. If you're a man with several millions and you haven't lost them to the credit crunch, why not give it to some floozy? Mm. And there are women who go on there looking for men with lots of money, and we met a couple of women and the woman who set up the website and another woman who said, I just want loads of money. I don't care how old. I don't care this, that and the other. I just want loads of money. I want to be wined. I want to be dined. He's got to earn at least 100,000, at least one car, several houses in different parts of the world, etc., etc., etc. And I got a bit cross.
Actually. Oh, yeah. I mean,
I got a bit cross. Also, the view was that men... You know, that's all they want you for,
you?
And men are this. Yeah, no, it was an awful view of men, awful. And I got very cross and I said, it's all very well while you're all trolled up and I, you know, Sarah, the lady we're talking about from the Gordon Ramsay saga actually said the same. She said, you know, you've got to look beautiful and stunning every minute of the day or expect your man to stray. And I was saying, what if you've been through what I've been through in 2008 and you've got, I know, to put it crudely, I said, if you've got one boob cut off and no hair from chemo, is it okay for your man to turn around, look at you and say, well, you look like crap, I'm off?
What was her response?
She looks shocked. I think she'll be back to talk to you shortly.
It's look but, beautiful and expect your man to stray might be a more realistic view in some circumstances.
Absolutely.
No comment.
No comment.
There are some good guys out here, you know.
I know
there's
there are.
Lots.
Very,
there's
very
lots.
Very much sought after you are too.
Yeah, so Phil, your personal, the thing you'll be glad to see
well,
the back of.
A bit more serious, actually, and that would be Sharon Shoesmith. I think the whole Haringey, every night we sit there and talk about it around the dinner table and just feel utter shock and horror and just the arrogance of the people leading the operation afterwards, I just thought was terrible. And I hate to see anybody lose their job, but frankly, I just think the less we see of this person, the better. I just think the whole thing was a debacle. We've been working with Tariq Ghaffur, the Asian police officer, who looked at Demarola Taylor and all those different investigations. And he said to me, the one thing is, it doesn't matter how often you go and do an investigation and report, they never seem to learn the lessons. And it happens over and over again. And let's just hope that that Sharon Shoesmith losing her job and the situation that happened there does real throw up lessons that are learned.
But the sad thing, what it might do is make people batten down and become even more secretive within those departments.
Well, the whistleblower situation was absolutely incredible. Without whistleblowers, we'll never know about these sort of things. So again, you hope the local authorities will have seen this and think, actually, to try and injunct a whistleblower is just sacrilege. You've got to listen to any information coming from anywhere and then, of course, investigate it properly.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. Ewan, person or thing you'll be glad to see the back of?
I have to say, as an individual who, with work and for other reasons, needs to travel between the northwest of England and London quite a lot, I'm going to be absolutely delighted to see the back of the West Coast Main Line upgrade because it has been a nightmare for goodness knows how long. I mean, as long as probably most of us can remember. I mean, I'm surprised that it wasn't Beeching who actually suggested the whole thing in the first place.
So come on, what are the horror stories, Ewan? What are some of the more fun things that have happened to you?
Well, I mean, you know, 6.5 hours back from London to Manchester or Liverpool on a Sunday through the whole of this. I wouldn't exactly call this fun. Although I would say that I think that the camaraderie that it sometimes causes between the aggrieved passengers who are sharing their horror stories of how they're trying to get home is sometimes quite good fun because it does lead into kind of lighter conversations. But it's just, it's gone on too long. And, you know, I'm slightly concerned that on the first day that the line was supposed to be in operation, that there were glitches with involving fuses and goodness knows what else.
Probably leaf on the line.
Touch wood, we shall see a smoother running service between the northwest and London.
And I bet you believe in Santa Claus as well.
I try not to.
I guess the personal thing, the thing I'll be glad to see the back of this year, 2008. Glad it's over. Glad it's over. Been there, done that. Got the calendar, got the T-shirt, several T-shirts, and we've moved on. Thank heavens. You're listening to Talk to Tricia here on City Talk 105.9, The Voice of Liverpool. We're doing a review of the year. We'll be back with more after this.
The Voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9. Talk to Tricia on City Talk 105.9.
Yes, this is Talk to Tricia. I'm Tricia Goddard with you until Panto Peak Price takes to the microphone. Now, this week's show is a little different from usual. As we ease into 2009, I'm joined by Liz Lacey, Phil Hall and Ewan Jenkins as we look back at some of the people, the events and things that made a positive or negative impression on us in 2008. Well, if the show so far is anything to go by, I think there'll be plenty of food for thought between now and 10 o'clock here on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
This is Talk to Tricia on City Talk 105.9.
So the category we're up to now is the event of the year. Liz Lacey, what would you say the event of the year would be?
Well, I ought to say one of my burlesque shows, oughtn't I? But yes. I'm dragging my mind away from corsets and suspenders just for an instant to say La Princesse, the big giant mechanical spider that terrorised Liverpool over 3 to 4 days and about which arachnophobes are still waking up in sweats. I thought it was marvellous.
Did you see it?
Oh, yes. I stalked it around the city. I actually don't like spiders at all. It's one of the few things, like credit card bills and spiders, are one of the few things that I'm really, really frightened of. So a spider bearing a credit card bill. Which that one was actually, it was about £1.2 million worth.
Gosh, I know.
But yeah. The thing that impressed me about it, apart from the artistic merit and the mechanical construction and the way it all worked beautifully, was the fact that the audience were so varied. I mean, I'm starting to dislike the word diverse because I think applied to everything, you know, piecemeal without any great thought often given into what that means. Mm. But this was a genuinely diverse crowd. It was people from all over the place. People who had not thought of, if someone had said, oh, you're going to see a piece of performance theatre or souped up animatronic mime.
Spider trotting around, yeah.
They would have been running wildly for the exit. But because it was so spectacular and because the crowd, I was there with my little boy and people were there with babies, elderly people were there. It was just a real nice mix. And people were being so helpful with each other, helping each other's children get a good view. There was no ill feeling at all. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful thing. And it put Liverpool on the map and on the national press consistently.
Yep, it sure did. A great spider. What about you, Phil?
It can only be one thing for me, and that was the Beijing Olympics. I just think there were so many sort of hair standing on the back of your neck moments if you're a sports fan or a human being fan, I think, because people were just conquering adversity and coming through. I think the rowers, when they just sort of just put every ounce of energy and got across the line for the gold, or when I think, you know, Chris Hoyer to achieve 3 golds or Rebecca Adlington, the moment she hit the side of the bath and won the gold and the look on her face was, I could still see it in my mind's eye. And I think... the 400-metre runner, Christina, when she came through on the final sort of 10 yards to win gold. I just think there were so many joyous moments that, for me, that was the event of the year.
Do you think that we'll be able to... The London Olympics will be anything like that? I mean, look at the spectacular opening and closing ceremonies. And I don't know about you, but I was a little bit cringy when we had the old... You know, the double-decker bus, and I was like, oh, flipping heck.
Well, one thing about Boris is he's not conventional, and I quite like that. I quite like the zany nonsense that you know, where he's twirling the flag in a slightly indifferent... I thought it was quite funny, but I do think we do events very well. I think there are big issues around the Olympic Games. The biggest is, are the public going to get to see any of these events? Because we're relying so much on corporate money... that so many of the tickets are going to the corporates. And we saw that in Athens, didn't we, when, you know, big companies have got the tickets. They don't use them all, so the stadiums are half empty. And I think they've got a real issue here trying to manage the public expectation because we're going through these difficult times, spending public money on it, and the public are not going to get the tickets. So,
or how are we going to get there, transport-wise?
Well, in London, you know, I live in London, and believe me, London is chaos at the moment because of stuff that's going on to get to prepare for the Olympic Games. I mean, they're widening roads, they're improving train systems. It will be very good on the day, I'm sure, but I think the problem will be whether the public get to see any of these big events.
OK, you and your event of the year?
Well, Phil's kind of stolen my thunder a little bit in that I was going to say the Olympics as well. So thank you, Phil. But I mean, I do think that was a remarkable event. And I think that just in terms of kind of, you know, some of the other news that we've had over the tail end of this year, it really was a kind of glimmer of sort of national pride, if you like, that kind of resulted from that. So I'm going to fall back on my second event of the year, which is actually a lot more personal. I've been very fortunate this year, Tricia, in that I've joined a community samba reggae band in Liverpool. all.
What do you do in this band? Do you sing?
No, I don't. We are a percussion band. We all play different types of drums. So I play a bass drum, and I'm going to shamelessly plug them. Their name is Batala Liverpool, and I joined at the end of August, and I've played in a couple of really great parades, including the Lantern Parade in Sefton Park and Halloween. We've also played kind of a couple of gigs around the Northwest that I've been very, very lucky to be part of. They're a fantastic bunch of people.
Do you wear brightly coloured shirts?
Oh, we absolutely do. We have Batala uniform, and it's just great fun. And, you know, I mean, I think for me, I'd have to say that I first saw them when the Tall Ships came to Liverpool. Sort of in the summer of 2008. And I enjoyed their performance so much that I just went and spoke to them straight afterwards and said, where do I sign up? And
can you play drums, though?
Well, I had done very, very briefly when I was at school a good 20 years ago, and ooh, nothing in the interim. So they've been very patient. They've taught me, and just a fantastic time. And I think that, you know, just reflecting a little bit on what Liz was saying, I think that one of the things that's fantastic about it is that there's been a real interest in those kind of community-based arts through the City of Culture, and they've Batala have had such an influx of new players this year that their total number is around about 60, with a waiting list of people to join. And I think that shows a real different side of the City of Culture and the success that it's had, that it's really got people engaged back in sort of arts in their community. And it's been, as I say, I can't reiterate enough, it's like, you know, if there's anybody from Batala listening, thank you guys. I've had a wild time, and I'm really looking forward to the next year playing with you.
Boom diddy boom boom boom.
Something like that. I'll send you a CD, Tricia.
All right, send me a CD. I'd have to say the Olympics as well. And we should say the Paralympics, or should we? I mean, it didn't get as much publicity, but reading about what the Paralympians did, I think if you go through an illness and continue to exercise, as I did, you have renewed admiration for people with any kind of disability who manage to A, keep fit, and B, actually excel at it enough to be selected by their country and sent overseas. So I'd have to say the Olympics and the Paralympics as well. Liz, what about personal events for you? Did you have any babies or...?
Let me think. Don't seem to have had any babies this year. No, I have had a complete life change.
Oh, have you? How?
Yes,
why?
I've moved from a big family house in the suburbs to living in a gorgeous bohemian flat in Gambier Terrace.
Right.
And I've also lost my job, my day job. I still write and freelance.
Yeah.
And so I've started to live in a very different way.
Scary or not scary?
Always interesting. I like change, and therefore, you know, I see whatever's coming and I think, oh, this, at least it's different. But I can see it. I think if I wasn't that temperament, it would be quite scary. And of course, financially, it's absolutely terrifying. But like the rest of the country, I'm trying not to think about that.
And Phil, what about you? Have you had any personal events of the year? Any babies?
Well, actually, I can't say. I mean, I've had a very lucky year, actually. But I think, you know, honestly, being a friend of yours, I think going through what you went through was really, really tough. And I think it's very, very, you know, being in a PR business and seeing that whenever people go through what you went through, people say they're brave. And I remember you saying to me, I'm not brave.
I'm not.
I've got this condition and I've just got to deal with it. And I think, you know, that in itself was a really interesting, brave attitude, because you weren't prepared to, you know, to take the sort of publicity that newspapers wanted, and you just sort of did what you had to do and then dealt with it in your own way. And I just think, you know, when we heard that you'd come through it, that was the best news of the year for me.
Oh, gosh. Gulp. that was your best news of the year. Liz, what was your best news of the year? I can't say anything, Phil, because I'm not going to cry on it.
No.
Managing to sell my house before they started giving them away with packets of cereal was probably the best news I'd had.
By, buy two, get one free at the moment.
Bog off. I take the note.
That must have been quite of a few, because it was literally, wasn't it, days between, you know, there'd be one person who sold their house 1 week and somebody putting their house on the market about 10 days later with an entirely different, you know, with no chance of selling.
And my situation was complicated slightly by the behaviour of my ex, who I shall not name, but he had decided that the whole credit crunch was a ruse that I'd cooked up to try and diddle him out of his equity in the property. So I was clearly priming Trevor MacDonald on the news, you know, with these false reports that he was kind enough to read out for me.
And you obviously were hanging around with a few bankers in London.
Well, it's that kind of expression, yes.
bankers, I said, bankers.
So it was all very fraught and terrible. And when it finally all went through, I went into the estate agent in Allerton, and the girl behind the counter who'd been dealing with it gave me a high five and said, I won't be forgetting this bit of conveyancing in a hurry.
And you and your best news of the year?
Well, I'm going to deviate a little bit from sort of personal answers that I've been giving to you this evening, Tricia, and kind of go to one that is a kind of professional piece of good news. And, you know, that is that, you know, Terence Higginstross and many others have been campaigning now for quite a long time to have personal, social and health education and therefore sex and relationships education made part of the national curriculum. You know, the sexual health of our young people in this country, and I'm sorry to do this because I sound like, you know, stuck record banging on about it, but, you know, sexual health for young people in this country is one of the biggest issues that they actually face. They've got appalling rates of chlamydia, high rates of teenage pregnancy, and I think that, you know, when we got the news back in October 2008 that actually the decision had been made to make that part of national curriculum, we all felt delighted, because there is a real opportunity for us now to make sure that our young people are coming out of school with decent sex and relationships education, and that they don't have to be picking up all these infections. They don't have to be kind of in situations where there are kind of numerous unwanted pregnancies. Yeah. So for me, on a professional but also on a personal level, because it's something that, you know, the kind of values of Terence Higginstross are something that I hold dear on a personal level. You know, but professionally, that was a fantastic piece of news for us this year.
Okay. My best news of the year, I think, would have been my daughter's A-level results, because I was diagnosed with breast cancer about 2 weeks before she did her A-levels, and her school offered her, you know, the special dispensation where she'd get an extra percentage added on, and she decided no, she didn't want that, and actually had to fight against it. yes, because they were saying, no, you are a victim. You're a victim. And she was going, no, I'm not. So gladly she learned something from me. And she got two A's and a B and got into the university of her choice. So I thought that was fantastic news, because I would have felt really rubbish if she hadn't. You've been listening to Talk to Tricia here on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. And that's it from me. Join me same time next week. In the meantime, have a fantastic first week of the new year. Bye.
Listen and log on to the voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9.